Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Real Birth Podcast, the show where real parents share real birth stories and get really honest about how it went. You might be a first-time expectant parent, or on your eighth baby. Perhaps you're a birth worker, or maybe you just love learning about birth. Whoever you are welcome here. This podcast aims to educate and empower listeners through the real stories of mums and dads. I'm Lucy Hill. I'm a doula, a mum of a toddler, and a complete birth nerd. Join me as I invite all kinds of parents to share their stories of pregnancy, birth, and beyond. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hello and welcome back to the Real Birth Podcast. We are here with you today starting season 3, which is absolutely incredible, and I honestly cannot believe that this is happening. So thank you so much for joining me again today. There was a slightly longer gap than expected between season 2 and 3 for a few reasons. Life was incredibly busy, and it turns out having a 3-year-old is pretty tricky. Some of you also were incredibly kind. My husband and I experienced a pregnancy loss when I was about 11 and a half weeks pregnant, and that was earlier in the year. So I did post about that on Instagram, and you were just so lovely giving your thoughts and love. So I really, really appreciated that. But yeah, that also kind of fed into the slightly longer gap. It felt a bit tricky to be kind of in that space at that time. But yeah, so I'm just so happy to be back now. And again, I also posted on Instagram recently that, yeah, we are really surprised and delighted that we are expecting again. So that pregnancy happened actually almost immediately after our loss, which I was just incredibly surprised and pleased about. But yeah, it's all been a bit of a whirlwind. So we are, yeah, expecting baby 2 in spring. So I will keep you posted with that. But until then, I will be sharing other people's fantastic birth stories. And yeah, you can expect, hopefully, my second birth story sometime sort of partway through next year. This season, I am so excited to be working with my first ever sponsor, Bridge House Pilates. Bridge House Pilates was founded by Megan, who is a Texan-born pregnancy, postnatal, and lower back pain specialist Pilates teacher, now living in Somerset. Megan is a fan of the show. She reached out to see whether my listeners might be interested in a special discount for her brand new postnatal Pilates course. So we met for coffee, we chatted for ages, and now I'm really, really thrilled to be able to bring you guys 20% off the Bridge House Pilates postnatal Pilates course, which is entirely online. Thinking about moving your body after having a baby can be daunting, not least because you somehow need to get yourself dressed and out of the house. But Bridge House Pilates' new online, on-demand postnatal course can be enjoyed at any time from the comfort of your own home. The course is flexible, it's bite-sized, and it's perfectly suited to the chaos of new parenthood. Weekly sessions focus on relaxation, building core strength, healing your pelvic floor, and addressing common muscular issues such as diastasis recti and back pain. The course is designed with busy new mums in mind. The platform will even track your progress if you get stopped partway through a video. Signing up also grants you lifetime access to all the course material, so you can return to your workouts whenever you need to, even if you go on to have more pregnancies in future. To find out more about Bridge House Pilates course and to benefit from our exclusive sponsorship discount, just go to courses.bridgehousepilates.com/postnatal-course and you can enter the code REALBIRTH20 for 20% off. Or you can check the show notes page or our social media, where I will also be sharing those links. To kick off our third season, I actually interviewed my wonderful friend Emma. Emma was actually a friend of my husband's from their college days, which was about 20 years ago now, but she quickly became just as much of a friend to me when we first met each other about 9 years ago. I've known Emma through her journey of trying to conceive her son, through his pregnancy, and also through her birth and immediately afterwards. So it is so special to be telling her story. And also, we see each other fairly regularly, and it's just so nice to see our boys playing together too. Emma's path to motherhood wasn't always straightforward. She and her partner at the time experienced some fertility struggles, and Emma had some previous medical history, which meant that she needed to have a cervical stitch placed, which would prevent her baby from being born too soon. I know that by the time you've got a few minutes into the episode, you will absolutely understand why. She is such a good friend of mine. We can pretty much just laugh through anything. I really hope you enjoy listening to her story. Here she is to tell it. Welcome to the podcast, Emma. Thank you so much for coming on. It's lovely to have you here. Obviously, we've known each other for a bazillion years, so it's not like I'm going to say nice to meet you. But thank you very much for coming on. Before we start, could you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and who's in your family?
So I'm Emma. I'm a teacher, single parent to Ren, who is now six, which feels crazy. Because you were there when I got pregnant and stuff.
That sounds terrible.
No, okay. You were not in the room when I got pregnant, but you were there through my whole pregnancy.
Yeah, I was from a reasonable and safe distance legally.
Exactly, yeah. It was all above board. Yeah. As a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, no active participation in the pregnancy, the making of Ren.
No.
There during the time of being pregnant.
You don't really ever tell like your full birth story, do you? You just sort of say, oh yeah, it was like this, or this is what happened. But so rarely you go into all the details, like even with your friends.
Oh yeah, like I've talked to my students more about my birth story than friends, like told it as a thing. And it amazes me still, the amount of students that are interested in birth. Mm. As teenagers, and then they ask you about it. I feel like I've told my birth story, and strangely to teenagers.
I think that's great though.
Yeah, but they find it strangely fascinating. And I think, like, I wish my teacher had talked to me about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, as someone that would potentially go on and have a child later on. And we don't talk about those things with the youth.
No, I think actually you're more likely to talk about it in a obviously age-appropriate way with very young children about you know how babies are made, you know, when there comes that time, and then with adults. But I just feel like we shy away from it with teenagers in a sort of, oh, if I tell you, you'll all go and have teenage pregnancies, you know. But actually they're just super curious about how it all works.
Yeah, and it's really nice. It made an impact on them, hopefully in a positive way. None of them seem to be horribly terrified by the idea of having children.
When you got pregnant with Ren, how was that process towards getting pregnant? And was it a really intentional decision? And was it simple or was it more complicated than that?
It was definitely an intentional decision. Like, we had decided we wanted to have a child and thought it would be a really straightforward process. Like, you spend your life trying not to get pregnant until you want to be pregnant. I never had an actual scare with pregnancy or anything like that. I was always on some kind of contraceptive, and then thought, well, I'll just come off this and we'll try and it'll happen, because that's what you're told happens when you have unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't at all. And a year into trying, we decided to go to the GP. Well, I went to the GP to talk about what are the options, like, why is this not happening? Because as far as I was concerned, my periods were very regular. I was a little bit older. Ren's dad, about 7 years younger, so we were both fit and healthy. And so he went for testing. He was absolutely fine. So it was like on me to have more tests, and had a lot of blood tests, a lot of borderline, we don't know. Are you ovulating? Are you not ovulating? Like, we don't know why you aren't getting pregnant. And I was referred to kind of the fertility clinic, who were also not sure. So I had internal kind of scans to check everything. I had had a colposcopy back in kind of like 2008, I think.
So that's a process when you've had some abnormal smear cells, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they will take some tissue away.
Yeah, so I'd had a few abnormal smears and was always on like a 6 monthly recall. So they were always very on it. And I had a colposcopy after another set of abnormal smears, after kind of like three abnormal smears. And they said a palm size sample of cells
Wow.
away, which is a lot, I suppose. And it felt like a quite traumatic experience. But I didn't ever kind of think, oh, this will affect my fertility later. And I'm sure probably somewhere along the line they said it might. But
Right. But you don't
2008,
remember that.
no. And we started trying in 2014. So it was a long time afterwards. Then there was talk of me being polycystic. So I had scans for that, but no real reason to think I was actually polycystic, although I did have some symptoms, like classic symptoms of that. And I even had, I can't remember the exact term, but I had essentially an X-ray on my fallopian tubes, to make sure there was no blockages, no cysts. And everything always came back completely fine. So it was just a case of, well, keep trying.
That's so frustrating.
Yeah, and then it got to the point that it became less fun. So we didn't try as much, and they were saying, like, we should try every other day, and this, that, and the other, and that isn't
You
a
can't
nice,
do that.
no, it's a forced encounter, as it were. We kind of just went, you know what, this may or may not happen, and we actually ended up buying a house that needed complete and utter renovation. It was derelict. We couldn't even live in it while we were doing it up. We had too many things to move in with parents. So we moved in with friends, and this is in the kind of the second year of trying, and we just went, you know what, sod it. Like, it doesn't even matter. It's not going to happen.
You've got to keep living.
Yeah, let's do the house. So it was about a week before my birthday, and we'd gone into town, and I just felt weird. I can't even explain it now what that feeling was. But I said to Jack, I'm going to buy a pregnancy test. And he was like, do you think you are? And I was like, don't know. I've just got this feeling. And we'd moved into the house. We'd been renovating it. We'd had to move in. Friends, we'd outstayed our welcome a little bit. Literally plastered walls, no skirting. We had a plumbed-in toilet and a sink. That's it.
That'll do.
Yeah, and it was like, that's enough. Like, we had a bit of a kitchen, and I did the pregnancy test, and it was the strongest two lines I've ever seen on a pregnancy test in my life.
And were
And I
you
was,
like thinking that you were late for your period or anything at that point?
no, I'd done it before I was due. I just
Right.
felt weird, felt this sensation of, I think I need to do a pregnancy test. And I couldn't even tell you whether we'd had sex. You know,
I
like,
mean, you probably
we've been
did.
so, we definitely did, because I mean, but our lives, we were just renovating and stuff. Like, I can't even remember as trying or any particular, you know, like, we'd just completely given up on the trying aspect of it and just thought, you know what, sod it. We'll just live our lives and get this house done. And yeah, November, end of November 2015, I was like, yeah, something just feels funny. Like, my stomach felt heavy, if that makes sense. Whether anyone's ever felt that sensation and thought, I must be pregnant. I don't know. But yeah. And then it was a shock. Like, we've been trying for 2 years, but we were still both like, we didn't talk for 2 days. I think his response was, who did this to you? And I was like, pretty sure it was you. So yeah, then we didn't like talk for 2 days, really. We just existed, and we were like, okay, so this is a
This isn't
thing,
happening then.
and we live in a shell of a house.
Oh God.
Suppose we should do something about this.
So how did the rest of your pregnancy go? Like once you'd realized that it was happening, and obviously you lived in the house, the shell house.
It didn't stay a shell for very long. We went into like overdrive. On paper, my pregnancy was incredibly complicated. In real life, I bloody loved it.
That's so
Like,
great.
I loved being pregnant. I would be pregnant a thousand. I want no more kids, but I would be pregnant a thousand times over if every one of my pregnancies was going to be like that. Like, I absolutely adored being pregnant.
So
And
how
as
was
a,
the first trimester did you have? Did you feel rubbish?
I was tired,
Yeah.
really, really tired. And all I wanted in the world was carbs. I wanted plain pasta with salt. I wanted all the salt in the world. And I drank all the milk that I could ever get my hands on. Like, calcium and salty plain carbs was like my life. McDonald's chicken nuggets were the one.
Yeah,
Like,
that's salty carb, isn't
oh my God, it was
Like,
beautiful. And also incredibly bloated. I had to start wearing kind of maternity stuff at like 7 weeks or
yeah.
something. And I had to tell work really early because I looked pregnant. People would have asked. And being in my work and in round kids who say everything they want to say whenever they want to say it, I'd already been asked several times in my life whether I was pregnant or not and not been.
Yeah.
Like, which is glorious as a woman, isn't it? That
Yeah,
feeling.
yeah.
But so very early on, kind of, I told people.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you feel about that? Because obviously, there's that whole, I think, well, very much a cultural thing about waiting, isn't it? But did you ever worry that you tell people and something might go wrong? Or did it just kind of feel like, well, it is what it is, and I'm telling people either way?
And I told people, and people were shocked when I said, like, look, I'm only like technically 7 weeks or 8 weeks. We'd had an early scan at 7 weeks to because I didn't actually believe it was real.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the like the 2 years of trying. Like, I almost felt like I was being like pranked. So we'd paid for an early scan, and there was very much a heartbeat and a tiny little dot
Yeah.
on the screen. But I told people because I just thought, actually, the people, if something does go wrong, if this doesn't happen for us, they're there to support me and they know why they're supporting me rather than potentially going through something and then having to tell them what I'm going through,
Yeah.
having them not known. I felt good about that decision. It was what it was, and I thought, I'm going to tell people, like, regardless. And
Think you need the most support in that time as well, like, because you cannot get away with it. You're just so gross.
and it's scary. You've been trying for 2 years and then you get pregnant and then you're like, oh my God, I've got to stay pregnant now. And actually, that's a massive thing. I had in the past what they considered a chemical pregnancy, which I didn't really get at the time. Like, it just kind of let it pass me by. And it was probably maybe a year into trying before we'd kind of gone through any fertility clinic stuff. I mean, the thing I did miss out when I'd actually been on Clomid in the 3 months before I got pregnant, they'd said I could have 3 months of Clomid to hopefully help me produce more eggs or ovulate more,
Yeah.
and that would be my last thing, and then it'd be IVF.
Right.
And we were in the last month of that Clomid, and it hadn't been happening, and we'd been doing the house, and I just thought, okay, whatever. And I'd had scans and it said the Clomid was working. There was definitely more, like, I was definitely releasing eggs and
Yeah.
this, that, and the other. And people knew about the fact that we were trying. I'd been very open
Yeah.
with the whole process because I think it's something that I never got spoken to about. No one that I'd known, even though I knew people that had had children and had been trying, no one really ever openly spoke about their problems with conceiving. And so I'm an oversharer regardless. Doesn't matter what. So people ask, I would be like, yeah, this is what we've been doing. This is what's happening.
I think people are really quick to also say, like, oh, do you think you might have kids then? Like, as if it just happens. And actually, if from the get-go you're the one that's like owning that conversation, then people don't ask silly questions anymore, because I think you've allowed them to think, oh, maybe people are struggling a little bit. How was the remainder of your pregnancy, and particularly those kind of last few weeks?
I got to about 13 weeks and started getting loads of appointments sent to me to go to the hospital for different things. I'd had my normal scan, my normal 12-week scan. I'd had my blood tests for kind of testing everything was fine. And then I had these other appointments come through that were for maternal medicine. I had a premature prevention clinic appointment. I just thought, it's my first pregnancy. Oh, everyone gets these.
Right.
So I just turned up. Like, booked my time off work and went. I didn't even take Ren's dad with me. I didn't take Jack. because I was just like, these must be normal, like just
Yeah.
check up kind of things. Turns out they're not.
No. So why were you getting these appointments?
Because of my colposcopy.
Okay.
So apparently in my notes somewhere, I had been put down as high risk of premature labour.
Okay, and is that because that procedure like weakens your cervix?
Yes, so apparently I have an incompetent cervix.
That's
That's the
nice,
wording.
nicely worded, isn't it?
Yeah, so like I turned up to this premature prevention clinic and booked in, and I was like, can you just tell me why I'm here? Because I don't really know. And the poor nurse was like, well, you weren't told you were referred to this. And I was like, no. She was like, well, because of your history, because you've had this, blah, 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 we now need to see you every 3 weeks. And we're going to do internal scans, and they love to test your urine. Like, they just love it. Like, during my pregnancy, I always had like a little pot of urine somewhere on me, like on my person. Like, I don't know. It was just like, I had to take that everywhere with me because I had so many appointments. It felt like it was just constantly on me. Like, so I turned up and did all the pleasantries. And I don't know if anyone has ever been to one of these, and I don't know if it's specific to my area, the management of these clinics. But you turn up, you wait, you go in and see a nurse. They then check your urine, weigh you, talk to you, tell you, or do your blood pressure and all of that. And then they send you back out into the waiting room with a sheet. And then they go, the next person, they're going to call you in again, and they'll do your scan, like your internal scan, and check everything. But you need to keep the sheet with you because you're going to need to undress and move rooms. I was there for 3 hours on this first appointment with no idea what was happening, having just been told why I was there, that my pregnancy was high risk, that I potentially could go into preterm labour or miscarry late. And I'm sitting there on my own, not having taken my partner with me, because I thought this was a normal
In and out.
in and out appointment where they were just, it was a typical clinic because that's what you do. And then I was told my cervix was incompetent, as we know, but it was half the length that it should be. And that actually, in 2 days, I was going to need to have a cervical suture put in.
I bet you just absolutely
I
pooed
was
yourself, like.
like, I was just like, okay, you need to explain what that is and what do you mean in 2 days?
So
They were like,
you're
well,
about 13 weeks at this point.
13 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, 13 weeks going, just about to be 14 weeks. And they were like, if we leave it any longer, you could miscarry. It's your choice, but this is what we're advising. So I'm like, crapping myself. I'm ringing Ren's dad. I'm ringing work saying, I've got to be off work for 3 weeks now because I'm going in for surgery in 2 days. And I've got to have a full spinal block and have this suture put in. And then I've got to rest for 3 weeks because it could tear or this could happen. And I'm a teacher. I had to plan every lesson for 3 weeks.
And had you had a bit more information about the fact that you were going to be referred for this and this was likely to happen, would you have had the information to be able to plan that properly?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's just so rubbish.
I'd never heard of it. Like, I had many midwife appointments where they could have mentioned this could be a possibility because you have had a colposcopy. We are referring you to the premature prevention clinic, and these are the typical things that happen. And yeah, then I would have been like, okay, I can choose to read about this, or at least I know that this is a possibility. I can allow work to know. I can take Jack with me or someone with me to be a support at this appointment, so that because all this information was coming at me, I felt blindsided. I was like,
And they all assume you know, so the information they're giving you is just like really off the cuff. It's not.
yeah. And I had to explain to probably three separate people, like, I didn't know I was coming to this clinic. I didn't know I was high risk of
Anything.
preterm labor or anything. Like, I thought this was a standard, very normal pregnancy. And like I said, on paper, it was mental. And I had to keep going back. So, yeah, so they tell me this. I'm then booked in for my surgery. 2 days later, they're giving me all the washes and stuff to like decontaminate and blah, blah, blah. And I have to go early and I go to the maternity ward and I'm there with everyone that's expecting to have their C-sections that day. And they're all looking at me, and I've got this little bump. And, you know, as people do, oh, you're really small. I'm like, I'm only 14 weeks.
Yeah.
And they were all like, oh.
Why are you here?
Yeah, like, how do you think, like, what else do I... Like, no one then wanted to ask any questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone else is like, they're all sat there with their partners, and they've got their little baby hats, because... Very strangely, the midwives came round and said, "You got your hat." And I remember thinking, like, what? Because like, I'm 14 weeks. I'm like, I've not even contemplated giving birth yet.
Yeah.
Like, I've not even thought about the labour part. And I'm like, why is everyone... Like, my mum's with me because Jack couldn't get the time off work.
Yeah.
But so my mum's there. And I'm not allowed to eat. So she's sitting there eating loads of chocolate bars and drinking tea. And I'm like, mate. Like,
I'm dying.
I'm starving. Like, stop. And everyone's going around asking about the hats. And I'm like, saying to my mum, like, why is everyone asking about hats? Like, why do they need to have hats?
Like, you've thrown in the deep end of, like, yeah, medical, so, like, birth there, aren't you?
I'm there. They're then measuring me for my compression socks and explaining that I'm going to go in and have a full spinal block, and they're going to put a suture in. And then I'm going to be in for a little bit because I've obviously got to wait for it to wear off and make sure I've been for a wee and stuff.
Up and about.
You have to do like a litre of wee or something to make sure you've got no blockages, no infections, nothing's, they've not nicked anything when they're doing it. And I had it done. It was fine. I was terrified. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never had a spinal block. I've never had anything like that in my life. And then I'm there in stirrups with my spinal block, and a woman appears at the end. She's like, I've not seen you since school. And I'm like,
no!
Like, and I'm like, why are you that end of me?
Oh.
And I was like, yeah.
Oh my God, that's so awkward. So somebody you'd been to school with,
yeah,
was the surgeon.
No, she was like one of the midwives helping.
Oh my God.
Like, and there was literally so many people in that room.
And did she, like, say that while she was literally stood at the wrong end?
Yeah, yeah. So she was stood the end. Like, I'd just been put in stirrups. They're just checking that I'm all numb. Like, can you feel this? Can you feel this? And then she just appears from nowhere. Like
she popped up between your legs. Like, hello.
Yeah, essentially. She may as well have done. Like, like she'd been hidden under the bed or something. I don't know. And then I was like, yeah, should we catch up later? Like,
but it was so fine, was it? Like, actually having it done?
Yeah, like, I was completely numb. So, like, but they forgot to put, like, the curtain thing up.
So you could see everything.
So I could see everything. And it took a lot longer than they thought it was going to take. And there's probably about, I reckon, 10 people in that room.
Mm.
Some people, like, next to my head just chatting to me. Like, to talk me through taking my pulse and making sure I'm all right. Matey from school down the bottom end doing something. And the surgeon. And then they were like, oh, should we put a curtain up? And then, like, that starts getting splashed with blood and stuff. And oh, I'm like, that, so then, like, I'm trying to really zone into this woman talking to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to feel a little bit nervous because... this is taking longer than they said it would take.
Yeah. And did they talk to you about the risks of the procedure in itself?
Yeah, they talked about the fact that I could still go into preterm labour, but if I did, I needed to get there quick because they've got to take that suture out.
Yeah.
Because that's just going to tear open.
Yeah.
If I'm not careful. And they talked about having to have it out at 36 weeks because I'd be considered pretty much full term. Less of a risk if I went into labour, then it wouldn't be a problem. And they were very adamant that I would go into labour within a day or two of having that stitch out.
That's always been my understanding, is they're quite keen to say, all right, we're going to take the stitch out, and then because you've got such an incompetent cervix, once that stitch is out, it's basically fair game and it's coming.
So I was like prepping myself for, I'm going to have this baby at 36 weeks.
Yeah.
Sod any predicted due date. This is happening at 36 weeks. So I've not got as long as potentially I could have.
Yeah.
So it was like a minefield just going into overdrive. Like, what do I want for my birth? Like, what, like, I've got to start thinking about this stuff because this is happening in like 23 weeks ish. I mean, I came out of the surgery and then put in the recovery bay, and then all these women that I've been sat in the kind of the waiting room with, and others that have obviously come in for an emergency C-section or whatever, coming in, and they've got their babies, and the amount of looks of sympathy I got
Gosh.
because I was not there with a baby. God, if this had been my labour, like, these women felt awful for me. And I had to explain to them. I was like, no, I'm just here for a procedure. By the way, congratulations. Like, because I saw their looks and I thought, I do not want them to think that they cannot celebrate this time and feel awful because they might be rubbing it in the face of someone that has lost their child. I mean, I was obviously fine. So I felt I was confident enough to be like, honestly,
Don't worry.
like,
Yeah, I'm good.
don't worry, I'm here. I just got myself a stitch, you know, I'm all sewn up. This one's staying in for a while. And then I was put on like a normal ward rather than the maternity ward and stuff. Yeah, went home and sat around for 3 weeks in a house that needed everything in the world doing to it,
Oh,
thinking,
relaxing.
I can't really do anything. I've not really got a sofa or anything nice to lay on. We didn't have curtains. I had bits of sheet up at the window and stuff, and went back to work, and everyone treated me like I was some kind of invalid, like I couldn't do anything for myself because now my pregnancy is high risk. So the rest of my pregnancy was a lot of going back to the hospital a lot. I was B strep positive as well. That had come up in one of my many urine samples. So I then had to have meetings with clinics about during my labor, I would be on antibiotics, I would be on a drip, I would have to have these antibiotics. And
It's really
if I
funny
didn't,
with group B strep because it's a transient
yeah,
bacteria.
it comes and
So
goes.
you can be positive when you get your test at whatever, and then you can be negative the day before you give birth, but they don't retest
No, so they just treat you like you're going to be positive.
And actually
And that,
the future implications of just bulk giving people antibiotics is probably not great if they're not needed. It's a really
no.
funny one, Group B.
Yeah. But anyway, so like, but then they terrified me with that. They were like, if you don't have these antibiotics, your baby could die. Like, literally said those words to me. And I was like, okay, well,
Yeah, of course.
I'll have them. So, yeah. So, like, the rest of my pregnancy was a lot of in and out of hospital. And then, yeah, 36 weeks came. And it was a very normal pregnancy, other than that. Like, I loved it. I loved having a belly and not having to suck it in and being all pregnant. Loved it. But yeah, so went back in at 36 weeks, had my stitch out.
And were you expecting your baby just to fall out, basically, at that point?
Essentially, because that's what they told me would happen. Like, I was expecting, like, I'll stand up and tomorrow I'll have a baby. And work made me finish immediately because I was too high risk. I could go into labor at work, like in front of a class. Could you imagine? Like, my waters might break. Like, so I finished at 36 weeks, 5 weeks before he actually came.
Cool. So 5 weeks of thinking it's going to happen any day.
Yep, I
That's
mean,
torture.
yeah, he was a week late. I had a sweep because I was over it.
Well, at that point, you've mentally committed to having a baby like 4 weeks ago. So you're not like just a bit over what they estimate. You're like so far over what you thought that you're done, like emotionally.
So I'm like, it's the due date's gonna happen. It's gonna happen by the due date. It'll be fine. Like, this was supposed to happen weeks ago. Like, but this is not happening. Like, there is not even a twinge that this might happen. Like, he is getting bigger and bigger. And so I'm starting to, like, now resent the fact that I'm pregnant because I should have had a baby by now. I should not be dealing with this in July and August when it is hotter than the sun and I am very pregnant. And like, and we have rushed to get this house done and we didn't need to. Like, and I'm mad about everything at this point because I'm also mad about the fact that I've finished work and all of my maternity pay has now gone. And as a teacher, I would have been off work. I was made to finish 2 weeks before the end of term. I would have just been on summer holidays. Got to 40 weeks and one day, and I had my appointment with the community midwife, and they asked me if I wanted to have any intervention. And I was like, yeah, why not? I'll have a sweep. And I remember that sweep being just the most awkward thing in the world. Like, she stared me in the eyes the whole time. And I was like,
please tell me it wasn't somebody you like went to school with.
No, this was not that girl. Thank God. Oh, can you imagine? Same girl. Like, no. Hi again.
No, okay.
But she stared me in the eyes while she did it. And yeah, it was like, I hate to be crass, but like the most awkward fingering I've ever had.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was so weird.
Was it uncomfortable or painful? Or
not at all.
No. Well, that's usually a good sign, though, that you're on the way.
She was like, I'm just going to have to be really careful not to break your waters because you're about 3 centimetres dilated.
Oh, wow.
She was like, you sure you're not in labour? And I was like, I'm pretty sure, unless labour's completely painless and nothing different from how it's been the whole of my pregnancy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm not in labour, but I don't know. You tell me. Like, I'm new to this. Maybe I am. Who knows? Like, so she then gave me this false sense of security that I must be maybe in labour, but this is going to happen. And it didn't.
Yeah. did you feel the sweep did anything?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. A friend of mine had her sweep 2 days before and gone into labour within 24 hours. So I was like, quietly, like, fingers crossed, hoping this is going to work for me.
Yeah.
Like, it worked for her.
So how did your labour start? How did it begin?
I woke up and was positive I needed a poo.
Yeah, okay.
Like, absolutely positive. It was probably like 2 or 3 in the morning, like very early hours. Thought I needed a poo, went back to bed. Very dull ache in the back, in my back, lower back. And then to the point that I was like, is this contractions? So I woke Jack up. I was like, I think I'm in labour. Like, no, you're not. Go back to sleep. And I was like, no, I think I am, because I keep getting these pains, like this very like dull ache. I thought I needed a poo. He's like, yeah, you probably do. And like, he was like fully just dismissive.
In denial.
The fact that this may be happening finally. I think because we've been told for so long that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
That then we both, like, yeah. I'm just going to be pregnant forever. This is how I live now.
Yeah.
Like, and I did go back to sleep, but I'd started timing my contractions because I was like, no, I think this is the start of something. But it was early hours, so I was knackered, he was knackered, so I didn't kind of push for anything.
No.
But I kept waking up probably every half an hour because it was painful.
Mm.
And then it was like every 15 minutes. We got to I woke up probably about 7 o'clock properly, and these pains, they hurt.
Yeah.
And I noticed I was bleeding and it was fresh, like red blood. And I was like trying to Google, like, is this a thing? Should I be worried? Am I supposed to ring someone? Like, what do I do? And I'm timing these contractions still, and they're like every 10 minutes. And I rang the MAU, and because I'm high risk, they told me to for any changes. And they were like, have a bath. Try and relax and see if you can really zone in. Are you feeling any movements? And he was a jiggly baby, like he was constantly moving around, and I hadn't okay. felt any movements. And they were like, right, get in the bath and just lay there and see if you can feel him move. We want you to do that for half an hour and really zone into his movements, and then bring us back. So I didn't feel one movement.
Okay.
And I was the kind of pregnant where you could see my whole belly move when he moved.
Mm.
So I knew this wasn't happening. So I then started to panic. I'm bleeding. I'm getting these pains. I'm not feeling movements from a very moving around baby. So we went straight into the MAU. We took our hospital like bags and all the stuff, but I wasn't sure what was happening.
Mm.
I wasn't sure at this point. Am I in labour and this is all normal? My waters haven't broken. So I get there, they strap me up. He's moving, but he's moving every time there's a contraction. So I can't feel him.
Okay, that makes sense.
So they like reassured me completely, but I'm still heavily bleeding. And these pains, they're getting fast. I'm still timing my contractions because they confirmed, yes, these are contractions. You are in early labour. But they're still about 6 minutes apart. But because you're high risk, you've got to be checked and have some kind of internal investigation on this bleeding and where you're at before you can be discharged to be sent home to then come back when it's closer to the time.
Yeah.
We all know that maternity units don't get to move fast because there's so many other things going on. So I'm there for an hour waiting for this discharge and this kind of examination, to the point that I am now doing a lot of swaying, a lot of standing up, getting jacked to rub my back a lot. And I am breathing like I've seen in films. I am heaving and like, I'm not enjoying myself. Finally get the exam. And they're like, you're 4 centimetres dilated, you're in labour, we need you on a drip for your B-strep, you need to go to the delivery suite. So I'm like, this is it. So Jack goes off and gets all the bags and everything else, and they're coming in with an IV and putting a cannula in and being taken up to delivery room. And I had this idea that I was going to have a water birth and all of this stuff. That can't happen because I've been monitored now. So I've got to be monitored for my whole labour. And I've got to have a strap on my stomach. And I can't be far away from a monitor because I'd come in. And had I not come in, I could have got my water birth. And
that feels really unfair.
Yeah.
They do have wireless monitoring that's waterproof. They just don't know. A lot of hospitals either don't know how it works or...
I'm going to say that these guys pretended that they didn't, clearly, because... Yeah, it's August. It's now 10 or something in the morning, maybe. I don't know. I've lost track. I'm starving because I've not eaten because I've rushed to the hospital. I start demanding that Jack gets me plain sandwich because I can't possibly stomach anything. So I send him off on his way to get me the plainest ham sandwich ever. I'm strapped up and I'm on my own, and the midwife is asking me if I want gas and air. And I'm like, yeah, I'll try it. It's pretty good, liking it. I'm into it. Jack comes back with the sandwich. I then complain it's the driest sandwich on earth and I don't want it.
That's literally what you asked for.
He looks at me like he's going to murder me.
Yeah.
Reins it in, realises that this is not about him.
Yeah.
Like, midwife's popping in every now and again, making sure I'm all right. She's not really in the room with me that much. Probably within maybe an hour, she's like, I need to check you because we're going to have to break your waters because they're not breaking by themselves.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Lots of people have their waters break at the very when they're pushing.
Like, yeah, well, these guys didn't want that to happen for me. So she was like, once you're 6 centimetres, we're going to break your waters. So she checks me. She's like, you are 6 centimetres. So I'm going to get you to sit down and we're going to break your waters for you.
Did she ask you if you wanted that?
No. And I didn't even think for a second I could even say no to it.
Yeah.
So she shows me this crochet hook, which I assume
never show it.
Like, she's like, so this is what I'm going to use. And she's like, and once I do this, it's going to be painful afterwards. I'm like, No, it's already painful now. What do you mean?
Yeah.
She's like, trust me, once that cushioning's gone.
Honestly, I just feel like that is so irresponsible.
This woman was crackers. I wish I could remember her face. So I could, if I ever saw her in the street, I'd be like, you are crackers. Like, you scared me.
That is just immediately sending your stress hormone super high, which is what makes things more painful if we are frightened.
Yeah, and I'd done no kind of like, no prep, my own fault. Done no thinking about like hypnobirthing or any of these lovely things where I could control myself. I just went into it thinking, this is just a part of it. It's got to happen. I'm going to have a baby. Labor's going to happen. And I wasn't educated on it. Like, and it is my own fault because I could have looked, but I just didn't. And I think partly that was because my pregnancy was a bit chaos.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't. Like my pregnancy was fine. I was fine. I was healthy. I felt fine. But like I was in and out of hospital constantly. That it just felt hectic that I didn't even give myself time to think about. I just thought, water birth. I love being in water. I'll have a water birth.
Yeah.
And then that was taken away from me. It was just like, no, you can't. And you're in labor. So you need to be somewhere. And you're on a drip and you've got to be monitored. So I thought, well, gas and air is my only option at this point. And I think my waters must have been broken for less than 10 minutes. My contractions are 2 minutes apart. I feel like I'm dying. I'm like, I want an epidural now. I've been up a long time already. Like, I need this. And I'm fine with medical intervention, like, whatever. I just wanted to be comfortable and safe. Like, that was my priority at that moment in time. And I wasn't comfortable. I was safe, but I was not comfortable. And I, as a person, I get very irritated when I'm not comfortable generally. So I thought, within my control, if I have this epidural, I will be comfortable. I might be able to relax a bit because I'm not relaxing. I've not put this gas and air down since she gave it to me. I've not breathed any air
And you
since she
start to
gave it
go a
to
bit
me.
insane, don't you?
Yeah, like Jack's, I remember Jack saying, you need to put it down, your eyes are rolling into the back of your head. But I was breathing it in and screaming it out. Like, I was not a calm person. I've asked for this epidural. Like, I'm getting up and down, definitely sure, still need a poo. And she's like, no, it's the baby bearing down. I'm like, no, do not tell me, crazy midwife lady, that I don't need a poo because I am high and I will take you. I'm making her unstrap all the monitors, go into the toilet. I'm too far away from my gas and air. It doesn't reach me. So I'm getting back up. I'm making Jack hold my hands. And he's like, I don't want to look at you while you're doing a poo. Do not leave me. And then I'm going back. And she's like, if you need a poo, just poo. I'm like, no, I am not going to poo myself. I'm like, where is this person for this epidural? It must have been 10 hours since I asked. It's probably been two.
Yeah, that's still a long time, 2 hours of wanting something.
And I thought that I asked for this epidural, it's going to happen within an hour because I'm already like 6, 7 centimeters now. And she kept checking me. And at no point did I get asked if I wanted, like, if I wanted to keep being checked. She just kept checking. She's like, I'm going to check how far along you are, how you're progressing. And to be fair, I was so like off my face. I didn't actually care. I'd at this point ripped my cannula out of my wrist. So they were like, we need to put you back on this drip. Can you just put the gas and air down for a minute? And I remember just being like, no. They were like, just swap hands. I was like, no. And they were like, you need to maybe lay on your back, or because you're laying on your side with your legs closed and that's not going to help. I was like, no.
Funnily
Like,
enough, actually, I did a course recently about birth positions, and lying on your side with your legs closed is a really good position.
well, she did not want me to be in that
Well,
position. And I was comfortable, or as comfortable as I could
yeah.
be. I did not want to lie on my back. I didn't move off that bed other than going to the toilet since she'd broken my waters.
Yeah.
And I had this idea that I would either stand or be on all fours,
Yeah.
but I couldn't move. And I wanted to be able to move more, and I wanted to be more free to kind of soothe myself, and I couldn't. And God bless my friend Jess, who had her second baby probably 3 weeks before I'd had Ren, who had talked to me about kind of transition phases of labour and how feeling that desperation, like this is never going to end and you're going to die,
Usually
and that
means you're
being,
really close.
being really close. And I remember she sat me and Jack down and talked us through this because she had had it with her first and no one had talked to her about it. And then she'd read about it. And then so she was like, you need to know this because I want you to, and I want Jack to know this so that when you start saying things, he can guide you and be like, no, this is close now.
So many people enter into that, and it is the most frightening part, and they don't know what it is. And that is the moment where most people will deviate from the plan that they have spent so long creating because they don't realize without somebody to guide them, a partner, a well-educated, supportive midwife, a doula, whatever, to be able to say, we know what this is good, this is transition. Without that, it's just, of course, you just throw it all in the bin. You go, just cut the baby out of me, I don't care. You're in that. So, yeah.
And so like it had got to that point, and I'd been told for quite a while, like, you need to stop pushing, because I had apparently been pushing for quite a while. And I was like, I'm not actively choosing to do this. My body is doing this. And she was like, I need to check that you're fully dilated, else you could hurt yourself. This could be a problem. So she checked and she was like, you're pretty much fully dilated. Like, and I was like, where is this epidural? Why has this not happened? And so she, she was lovely. She took very good care of me generally, but crackers, obviously. She had her way of doing it. They've put a new cannula in. I'm on a second bag of antibiotics for the possible B strep. I'm pushing. She's telling me not to push.
Impossible.
Yeah, I'm just doing it. Like, my body is doing this. I am hitting that transition phase because I'm saying to Jack, like, I'm going to die. Like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm dying. Like, this is never going to happen. And he's, obviously, something has kicked in and he's gone, oh, yeah, remember this. And I'm asking for stuff. I'm asking for a drink. My mouth is bleeding horrifically because I've been huffing this gas and air. I've split all my lips open. I've not taken any breaths. I've not had anything to drink. I've been screaming, like my throat is dry. So I start drinking and then I throw up, really badly throw up. And I remember being like in tears. And then this woman going, I can see his head.
It's really, really distressing in the moment, but being sick is one of the best things that a midwife or doula can see, because there's a correlation between that instinct, you know, like when you can't control it and your muscles go and you are sick. It's the same instinct, like in reverse, of like the fetal ejection reflex. And often while people who are being sick will dilate quite quickly because it's like your sphincters release when you're being sick quite often. So actually it's horrible in the moment, but if someone's sick, usually it means they're close. Yeah.
So she's like, I can see his head. I'll be back in a minute. And Jack's like, she left for a good 45 minutes. Like I had no perception of time. So I'm like, this baby's going to be out soon because she could see his head. Like, that's cool. Like, I'm good. I've been sick. Like,
yeah,
I'm all right now. Like, yeah, let's do this. This hurts, but let's do this.
Do you feel a shift in your perception and your mind game once you'd been sick, once you'd got over the other side of transition and when you knew he was imminent? Did you feel like, I can do this now?
Yeah, this is happening. I can do this. I am a fucking superhero.
Oh, amazing.
But my midwife is not in this room. And where on earth is she? Like, what is happening? But I just thought, my body's doing this regardless of whether you're here or not.
Yeah.
And then some surgeons pop in and they're like, oh, are we too late for the epidural? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And then good old midwife babe rocks back in. It was like a comedy sketch, like when they came in, the midwife that had disappeared kind of came back in around them and she was like, oh yeah, like I think we're about ready. And I was like, hello again. Hello, lady that disappeared. At that time, was pretty sure she was never coming back.
You mean she'd just like abandoned post, left her job?
Yeah, like my shift's over, bye. I had no perception of time.
No.
Like, I know that I'd been at the hospital since about 9 in the morning. And it was now, and it was getting dark. But it wasn't dark because we're midsummer, and I'd gone through that transition phase. I'd been sick. I felt like a full superhero now, like, and I was like, I've got this. And that burning sensation.
So you didn't actively like push.
No, like there was never like you need to push. Like my body was fully in control of that.
Yeah.
At no point did anyone need to guide me through what I needed to do. And that still amazes me to this day that no one needed to tell me what to do.
No.
Like they tried to tell me what not to do, but my body was like, no, I've got this.
Yeah, nature is stronger than the guidelines, unfortunately.
And it was like, no, we've got this. This is what's happening and it's going to happen now. And she, I think the only time she was like, one more push and he'll be here. And he was. And
did you find that took quite a, in your mind, did it feel like it took a long time to like push him out?
Yeah. It felt like it took ages. It was, I think it was like 17 minutes.
God, that's really quick.
And then he was here. and she put him on me. And I remember just being, is he real? Is this real? And Jack being like, yeah. And I just cried, like full
Oh,
emotional
really?
release. And like, I was like,
Also, like it's done, like you've done
yeah, like instantly, no pain, done. They asked me if I wanted the cord to be cut straight away, and I said no, because I'd read about kind of the benefits of that. And then they asked Jack if he wanted to cut the cord, and he was like, no, it looks like a finger. Like, I want to cut someone's finger. Like, so she cut the cord, and then he was just there. And I made Jack do skin to skin. I was like, take your t-shirt off. And held him, and I remember looking over, and I don't know where my phone came from, but I took a photo of Jack holding him, and then within about 5 seconds, he'd done his first poo all over Jack,
Oh
and
gosh. Oh,
all
that's the
in his
worst.
belly
It's
button,
so hard to get off your skin as
and like
well.
all in his belly button, and it was everywhere, and he was like, oh, like, and at this point, they'd given me a vitamin K injection in my leg. And we're like, you'll probably want your gas and air back, and we're going to tell you kind of to push to deliver this placenta. And that took longer. That took like 25 minutes, half an hour. And I remember that being painful. But then I just remember being intrigued by the whole thing that was happening now, like being really in the room and really present, having not been very present. All of a sudden, like it was like pure clarity, and I was like watching them check the placenta, and I was like fascinated by what was happening, and Jack was holding Ren, and yeah, and I was just like, this is a whirlwind now, like I've been like jogged back into like some crazy reality, and I have a baby. And they were like, we're gonna need to do some stitches, like there's some tearing. Do you want to feed him while we do your stitches? And I remember being like, no, because I don't know what I'm doing.
It
Like,
didn't feel like the right moment for you to do that.
no, I was just a bit like, no, do I need to? And they were like, well, no, it's not like imminent. And he wasn't crying, and he'd been checked, and he was fine. And they'd like swaddled him, and they put his baby hat on because we'd taken the hat, you know, like the necessary hat. I'm still unsure why it's so necessary.
It's
Like,
not.
but they were so adamant about this baby hat. So,
I know
and it looked like
it's based, from what I know, it's based on a study which was done on adult men who are out in the Arctic. And funnily enough, the ones who didn't wear hats had hypothermia a lot quicker than the ones who did. So babies, ergo, need hats to not die of cold. And
I mean,
actually, there's a lot of evidence to say that actually the thing that creates that beautiful bond and also helps with breastfeeding is sniffing your baby's head. And that's why we sniff babies' heads like mad. And actually putting a hat on them immediately is like the worst thing you can do. It's so
yeah.
crazy. There's not really any reason. Unless your baby is actually cold, like actually their body temperature is not right, then fine. But there's no reason why just holding them and having a blanket on them wouldn't just keep them warm. So.
I mean, it was also August and probably the hottest day of
Oh,
the
yeah.
year. Like,
He's cool.
it
He's not
was
gonna.
so hot because I remember asking for a fan at the start of my labor, and they were like, oh, we'll see if we can get one. I was like, get me a fan, it is too hot. I wasn't like instantly exhausted, but there was definitely like a part of my body that was like, oh, this is rest time now. And it took 2.5 hours to stitch me up. The shift actually changed for the midwife in between. So crazy lady that disappeared fully, and someone else came in and took over. So she started my stitches, and they had to get a surgeon to come in because she really struggled with the stitching. That bit felt quite traumatic. Then they were like, right, get up, have a shower. And I was like, what? Like, I haven't been down this bed for hours. Like, and I've just pushed a baby out, and you've just spent 2.5 hours stitching me up. And now you like want me to just, yeah, I'll just jump out of bed. Like,
Go have a
let
nice
me get in that
shower.
shower, yay. And like they'd swaddled Ren and put him into they put a nappy on him and put him into his little bed on wheels. And I remember Jack having to come into the shower with me because I just felt really wobbly. I mean, he was born at 6:45 at night, and we're getting towards kind of 11 at night now, and I've not eaten. And then they were like, you should feed him now. And I was like, okay. I had no idea what I was doing, how to breastfeed, how to hold him. Like, no one was there to show me.
Did anybody stay with you during that first feed to kind of help you?
There was a woman around, and I remember asking her, like, is this right? And I remember it just being incredibly painful, so excruciatingly painful. And she was like, no, he looks like he's latched on fine. And I just remember being like, this is really hurting me. And they were like, right, you can go home. And I was like, I don't want to go home. I'd like to be transferred to a birth centre. There's an amazing one. It's a good 45-minute drive, though, from the hospital we were at. And they rang and they were like, yeah, they've got a bed for you. You can go straight there. So we get in the car with a baby going to this birth centre in the middle of the night. It's like midnight.
Yeah.
And Jack's not allowed to stay. And there's me and one other woman there who's got twins, from what I remember, and she's having a really difficult time. And these twins are crying constantly. I get there and I get into bed and they go, do you want any help with feeding? I'm like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what I'm doing. And I tried to feed him at the hospital and I don't know if I fed him or should it hurt as much? Like, and they were like, it'll be a bit painful. It'll be uncomfortable. I was like, no, this hurt, like really, really hurt. And she looked and she kind of helped me adjust kind of his latch and said like, and she was amazing. She was absolutely incredible. And they showed me how to change his nappy and make sure that like his umbilical cord and the clamp was like outside of his nappy, and he will do these poos and it's going to be really difficult to get off skin and you should use warm water and cotton wool and all this information. And it's like the morning again, like I'm nearly 24 hours after this whole experience started and Jack's not there and it's empty and dark and
you can't retain that information. You need somebody else.
No, and then I remember trying to feed him and it being really painful, but he was settled and he was fine. And I remember going to sleep and waking up 5 hours later, and we'd both slept for 5 hours. Ren hadn't stirred, and we woke up and I tried to feed him again, toe-curlingly painful.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman by my side the whole time, and she was like, I'm not sure that he's latching properly. Just let's try the other breath. Like, I want to be able to see him from both sides. And she was amazing. And she was showing me how to like unlatch him and like relatch and what it should like feel like and how much of my nipple I should see and all of this stuff. And I was convinced I'm not doing something right here. This doesn't feel like I thought it should feel or like I've heard it would feel. And he was feeding for a long, long time. And Jack had come back and it was mid-morning and it was a Sunday. So there was no like doctors or anything around. So I couldn't have like my 24-hour check. They were like, you're going to have to go to your GP tomorrow morning. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to go home. I just need my home comforts now. Like, and in hindsight, I should have stayed at the birth center. But I was like, so just, I need my house.
You just want to get in your own bed.
I potentially need to bottle feed this kid as well.
Did anybody look at whether he might have a tongue tie or anything like that?
No. And I was pretty sure that he had.
Yeah.
No one checked him for a tongue tie. I asked the midwife at like day two or whenever they come round.
Yeah.
I'd asked the GP, but they were like, we don't really check that. We're just checking on you and him. Like, you can ask your midwife tomorrow. You know, so it would have been day three. So, and I've been like trying to feed him and it was so painful.
It's like, just like every minute, let alone every hour of those first few days goes on forever. So when somebody says, oh, they'll check you on day three. And if you're on day one or day two, it's like, I can't do this. Like, I know that in normal life, it's just, oh, it's just tomorrow. But it's in just had a baby life, that's unbearable.
Yeah. And I had no idea what I was doing and no idea whether he was feeding. And I was in pain. I was crying every time he was latching on because it was so excruciating. Mm. And I'd reached out to friends that had breastfed or were breastfeeding. I was like, what do I need to be doing? Is there other other ways I can hold him, other ways I can position him? I tried lying down on my side. I tried holding him like that kind of rugby ball kind of hold. So he was like backwards across, like, and my milk hadn't, obviously it hadn't come through. So I couldn't express. I felt useless. So I was like trying to breastfeed, but then I was so desperately like panicked that he wasn't getting anything.
Yeah.
At all.
I'm really surprised that the midwife didn't talk you through something like a hand expression just for the first few days while, you know, maybe he's building up his jaw muscles and you're figuring stuff out together. Because a lot of people will like hand express, and then even if they cup feed, like that's because babies sometimes people don't want to do the bottle that quickly. So sometimes even on a teaspoon, like, is enough because their tummies are like that big.
Yeah.
But I'm really surprised.
This is the first I'm hearing about hand expressing.
Yeah.
Like, this was not a thing that was said to me, like, at all. The midwife was like the community midwife that then came out and did the house visits, like home visit team. I had a different person every time. They just went, well, you've just got to persevere. And I was like, but am I doing this right? And she was like, yeah, it looks fine. And I was like, but I'm really struggling.
Yeah, they're not listening to you.
I was in bits about it.
I bet
like,
you were.
My nipples were bleeding horrifically.
Yeah, and that isn't normal.
No, and I was like, I was in so much pain. I couldn't feed in front of anyone because it just made me cry because it hurt so much. So all these people coming around to visit, and then I'm having to go upstairs. I'm in pain because my stitches,
it's just awful.
And I just remember getting to day five, and he was throwing up blood, like spitting up blood.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm done.
Yeah, you've done. And also, like, not only have you tried all the things, but you have asked and asked and asked for someone to help you, someone to assess you tongue tie, you know, someone to assure you that that's normal when it's not. It's just really disappointing because, like, in this country, we have the lowest breastfeeding rate of any country in Europe. And our boobs are the same. Like, we don't have different boobs to people in, like, other countries. We just don't have anywhere near the level of supportive people who know what they're doing.
And it wasn't something I was devastated about not being able to do because I'd had conversations with people like, are you going to breastfeed? I was like, I'll try.
Yeah.
And I'd made a point of like committing to myself, like, I will try, but if I can't, I need to feed my baby.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I say I was fine. I wasn't, because I felt disappointed that I couldn't do it. And that it didn't get easier.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it wasn't going to be easy because I know people that have struggled, but then they've got there and it's become easy and it's become second nature, and it wasn't doing that for me. And yes, okay, it was 5 days. And yes, I could have persevered, but I was in so much pain. I wasn't going to heal by continuing to breastfeed. And he was feeding for like hours at a time.
Mm.
Like, he was latched on for over an hour and just constantly.
I'm so surprised I didn't look for a tongue tie.
Even now, like, I'm just like, he was tongue tied.
Did he make any sort of like clicking noises when he fed it? That's classic tongue tie.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard to determine if somebody has a true tongue tie. You do need a proper medical professional, but extreme pain and that sort of clicking and gasping where you feel like they're taking in more air than they should would be an indication of getting that checked. It's just, yeah. People just drop the ball and let you down on that.
Yeah, and it is what it is. And actually, it was an incredibly healthy baby. Like, there was nothing wrong with that kid.
Yeah.
Like,
I know you say you weren't, like, devastated by it, but the situation is a bit shit, like, the way that it left you feeling. But once you got to that point where you were just like, right, I'm done, I've done everything I can, this is how I'm going to feed my baby, I've made my decision, here we go, did things start to feel easier?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd kind of passed that mental block and you were able
And he was feeding regularly. He was sleeping well. I was sleeping better. Like, I was healing.
Yeah.
And my milk came in, and I remember it really vividly. Like, because I was wearing kind of like pads and stuff, as you do. I remember going for a shower and taking my like bra off and just it being like a fire hose.
Yeah,
and I
was the like, shower
oh,
is.
Oh, here it is. Like,
yeah.
And being like, ah. And just, I remember just being feeling engorged. It was just really bad management of me and giving me support with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just really unfortunate that that kind of thing happens.
Yeah.
A lot.
And I don't think it's that uncommon. People don't know what they're thinking. I think if it's okay, it's okay if it just sort of happens. And some people, it just happens. You know, the baby just latches and that's it. It's fine. Mm. But when that's not the case, everybody should have somebody that literally sits with them and works out what's happening until they're confident. And then they get sent home.
I think had I stayed at the birthing center, that would have happened for me. And I think those women would have been amazing. And in hindsight, I should have stayed there longer than like 24 hours. But the urge to be at home and need my and get my space was stronger. And I felt like in that moment, I was making the best decision for me and him. I was tired and I was sore. And I had this little thing that wasn't that little because he was like £8.10. When he was born.
Yeah.
And that was big.
Yeah. Like, big enough, eh?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, his dad was £10.06 when he was born.
Yeah.
So I remember just being told all the way through my pregnancy, you're going to have a big baby. His dad was big. Which is not always helpful to hear. Like, I mean, I was £6.07, so I was little.
Yeah.
So I think he balanced himself out, maybe.
Yeah.
Being £8, and he's about in the middle. but yeah, it was just, yeah, the after care was terrible. And they were very much more focused, rightly so, to have a focus on it, on my mental health and how I was doing in those home visits. And I'm glad, because I did need support and I wasn't feeling great. But then I wasn't feeling great because I was worrying about the feeding and I didn't resolve that. Yeah. And I felt this disconnection with him because I couldn't do that.
So if you were going to give some advice to somebody who's having a baby very soon and is maybe worried about that aftercare aspect of things and maybe not getting the support they feel like they want, is there any advice that you'd give somebody with your 2020 hindsight?
I think it would be to push for that. Like, I let them just tell me and I knew I wasn't getting the support, but I didn't feel I could say anything.
Yeah.
And I think, and I've listened to other people on your podcast talk about advocating for themselves much more solidly, or a partner doing it. And I think maybe I should have had that conversation with Jack, who could have been my second voice and backed me up, whereas he didn't really know my thoughts and feelings on it because I was feeling overwhelmed. We hadn't had a discussion about that bit before he'd arrived, and he knew I was struggling with it, but he didn't know the extent in which I wanted to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And therefore he didn't say anything during those visits. Like, I should have fought it.
I think it's really important as well for you to be able to say to somebody, I give you my consent to advocate for me.
Yeah.
And even just somebody knowing that you are happy for them to be your voice, lets them feel like they can speak up a bit more.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing I wish we'd had that conversation during my pregnancy about what I needed his role to be afterwards.
Yeah.
We just never even spoke about it. It was just like, we're going to have a baby and that's it, done.
Yeah.
Like, let's get through this pregnancy and this is what I want for my birth. And we had all the conversations about all of these things. And we had conversations about, well, I don't think I want to see people straight away and I want to be able to make that decision. But we didn't talk about feeding.
Mm.
I mean, we did. We, like I'd said, I am happy to bottle feed, but I would like to breastfeed if I can. But we didn't then talk about, if I can't breastfeed, how do we get that support? It was
it's really tricky though, because you don't know what you don't know before.
No.
But one of the things that I say, and I've said it like a million times and I will always say it, is if you think that breastfeeding is something that you want to do, then to make contact with either a breastfeeding support group or a breastfeeding consultant before you have your baby, and to book in an hour or two of their time when you're pregnant, or ask a friends or family, say, look, I don't want any clothes for the baby. I would like you to pay for a session for me to sit with a breastfeeding consultant.
And that would have been incredible.
And then it's like, you've got that number there before you're in that crisis moment of, oh my God, you know, I can't do this. This is awful. You've already made contact with that person. You know they're coming over. They're there to support you. And then if it still doesn't work out, then that's fine. But it's like, you don't end up in that panic moment of, what do I do? Who do I call?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I had no clue. I still don't to this day know about anything in this local in my local area about where I would have gone for that support. But at no point did someone say, oh, there's this, you can ring this number, there's this group online, nothing. And
we're not very well connected in this.
No, and but I hadn't even thought about researching that. Because it was a given, I will feed my baby. We'd got ourselves a prep machine, you know, the magical little baby coffee machine that makes all your milk for you in seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm glad for that. But had I not had that, and then I couldn't have done it.
That's sheer panic, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. Right, someone needs to go out and get bottles and this, that and the other. And I'd prepared for the eventuality.
Mm.
And maybe that was a psychological thing, that I'd prepared for the fact that I might not be able to. So I went, oh, I can't.
Yeah. I know that some breastfeeding consultants do say don't buy anything for bottle feeding until you need to. Because if you really need to, there will be a 24-hour Tesco somewhere. But I understand you know, just having stuff prepared. But I think that's really good advice. I think just having that conversation and having a vague kind of idea of the support that you can access before you get to the point where you need it. Well, thank you very, very much for sharing your story with me. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Nice to chat about it.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Thank you so much, Emma, for sharing your story and for making it such fun along the way. I know that Emma's experience, particularly with trying to get pregnant and then having to have a cervical stitch, will be so helpful to many people. And I really hope that this episode can be reassuring and comforting to anyone else who might need to have this procedure done. I also just really love the way that Emma speaks about her students and, you know, just young adults and teenagers in general. I truly believe that we should talk about birth not just with our adult friends, but with children and teenagers too. They just get such a bad rap these days, and I think the more hidden away birth is from all people of all ages, the more abstract and scary it can seem, particularly to a teenager or young person. So just mega well done, you, Emma, for just being the voice these kids need and being open and honest about how it really is. That is all from me this week. Thank you again for joining me for another season. If you like what you heard today, you could share this episode or any of them with a friend. You could follow me on Instagram or Facebook. I am The Real Birth Podcast. You could rate and review or subscribe to my show on your podcast platform. Or if you're feeling particularly generous, you could buy me a coffee. The link to do this is in my Instagram bio, and it just keeps me going and is really appreciated. I am sending you all the love. Thank you very much. And I look forward to sharing another amazing birth story with you next Wednesday. Bye!